1 o'clock hour, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase Willie and D-Mace. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick with you. D-Mace with the day off. He'll be back on Fridays. He takes his son back to school. We say hello to Mitch Light from The Athletic. He joins us now. Clark Lee coming up at the bottom of the hour. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Chase. Hope you're doing well.
Doing fantastic. Week zero is in the books. I will save Vanderbilt for Willie. Look, my biggest takeaway, and I'm not firing a guy after 1 week, but Scott Frost, things are very frosty right now for him in Nebraska after they lose to Northwestern in Ireland.
Is that an original, Chase?
No.
Things are frosty for Scott Frost? Yeah. I wonder if anyone's ever used that before.
I think it's been used a few times, I'm sure.
Okay, so maybe don't get a shirt.
Chase. Yes.
Probably trademark. But, that goes without saying. It was as pivotal of a week one, week zero game that I can remember, in recent years, just because of the stakes. Like, we've had other coaches on the hot seat, but maybe playing an inferior opponent, and so obviously you can't lose that game. But as far as just a competitive game against a team that they should beat, they think they should beat, that they dominated last year, the way they opened up, throwing the ball all over the place, they looked great in the first half. Just a devastating loss, just because the way they lost, too, the same script as last year, losing close games. It's a long season. We can sit here, Chase, and say, oh, he's done, whatever. But, those guys, they have to use the cliche, circle the wagons, and there still is time to kind of turn that thing around. But that was not a good opener. And imagine how long that plane ride must have been for that team.
Oh, no doubt about it. Tennessee will kick off their season Thursday night, hosting Ball State. I've been seeing pictures of Neyland Stadium after some of the renovations that have been done, so they'll be there for that. Tennessee, a huge favorite, 35-point favorite. Brew McCoy has been ruled eligible, which I think is big for them and that offense. But what are some things you want to see as Josh Heupel takes steps forward in year two?
Yeah, just sort of taking care of business. You don't want it's a very good question, a fair question, but like you can say, let's say they struggle. Let's say it's 21-10 at the half and they win 35-17. They don't look great. Does that mean that things aren't going well? No, it doesn't. But I think big picture, you want to take care of business. This is a Ball State team that has had some success, especially offensively. They've got a good coach, Tony New. That's his alma mater. They've had some good quarterbacks there in the past, but they're picked towards the bottom of the MAC West, so it's a team, by the point spread that Tennessee should handle with ease. So, yeah, you just want to see them kind of take that next step, because the level of competition, just take care of business. 28-3 at the half and win going away and not have Hendon Hooker in the game in the fourth quarter would be, probably the perfect plan for Tennessee.
Talking to Mitch Light. So, Mitch, let's ask a question about Vanderbilt. You're level-headed. You know the history here. Not to get too high or too low, but what is your assessment of Hawaii?
So you have not made non-refundable hotel tickets for Atlanta for the SEC?
I haven't done that. I can get out of it if I made the reservation, but I can still get out of it without paying.
Okay.
But I think back. They got whipped by East Tennessee State at home last year in the first game. So you got to start there, right? They look much more, well-oiled, cohesive, all of that. From a year ago,
yeah, no doubt about it, and we can see, we don't know how good or bad Hawaii is going to be. We probably think they're not going to be very good. It was a team that was, I think, 6-7 last year, but maybe had more upheaval in the offseason than any program in the country as far as losing players. So, I think they're really going to struggle on defense. But credit Vanderbilt for taking care of business. But people look back at the ETSU game, and rightfully so. But when people ask me, comparing, the one I look is UConn last year, which was more midseason. UConn was probably the worst team in the country last year, FCS, FBS. They did not win a game against another FBS team, and Vanderbilt beat them at home on a walk-off field goal. I wouldn't say they were fortunate. They earned it. They marched down and scored. So if you're looking for a comparison, that's the one. So even if you're going to say Hawaii might be one of the worst teams in the country, Vanderbilt just ran them off the field, and I clearly did not expect Vanderbilt to win dominate that thoroughly. I thought that they could control the line of scrimmage and run and establish themselves and their athleticism. I thought Aaron Taylor on the broadcast kept bringing this up. What really stood out was Vanderbilt's athleticism, at some of the skill positions. And I thought Vanderbilt hit really hard on defense. I was really impressed with that. And, you know, you can sit here and say the ball bounced their way sometimes. It did. You know, they did lose a couple fumbles and they had some turnovers that they ran in for easy touchdowns. Okay, let's say the ball doesn't bounce their way and they win 42-10, you know, or 42-17. Still a very thorough and impressive win. So we don't know yet, Willie. We'll find out more in the coming weeks, but clearly, clearly very impressive and showing, you know, that this program at least has made some steps forward in the offseason.
What do we know about Elon?
Not too much. I did a little Elon research today just because I was curious. The CAA, Colonials, usually one of the better FCS leagues. I think they went 5-3 in the league last year. They got a fourth-year coach. So, you know, it's not – I don't think they're a ranked FCS opponent. Like, one thing last year, not to make excuses, but, like, East Tennessee State ended up having a really good team. I think they might have made the semis or maybe the quarters of the FCS. So, at the time, it seemed like even a worse loss. I don't think Elon is close to what ETSU was last year. But honestly, I don't know too much about the Phoenix, I believe, is their nickname.
I believe that's correct.
A former producer of ours went there.
Oh, yeah. I know a few people that went to Elon. One of the ones I'm intrigued about this coming weekend, Mitch, is we look at a full slate here. Utah at Florida. Give me your insights on, you know, Billy Napier. What an interesting game to start a career.
It is such an interesting game. It's such a barometer game. And, you know, for years and years, college football has, like, been a regional game, and we talk about conference supremacy and all that, and so much is made out of it, and we just, there's not, the sample sizes are so small in these non-conference games. Like, I always use that three years ago. Remember the Oregon-Auburn game and the Bo Nix debut? It's like, Bo Nix throws a probably ill-advised pass at the goal line that Auburn catches and scores a touchdown. So based on that one play, like, SEC is awesome, the Pac-12 stinks. You know, it's just because right. Which is, I mean, kind of true, but you know what I'm saying.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, we talk about narrative all the time on this show. I don't care what sport you're talking about, but there's a narrative that starts with something like that.
Exactly. It's not like there's 10 Pac-12 SEC games every year. Like, in basketball, there's those challenges. Like, that's just one game. This is sort of it, but it's even because of what's going on with realignment, expansion, TV deals coming up, it's a huge game for the Pac-12. Utah is pretty much the consensus pick to win the Pac-12. They won it last year. They got a lot of guys coming back. And Florida is, by all accounts, a middle-tier SEC team right now. Now, it's an upper-level program, but they're a middle-tier team. So just think, if you're the Pac-12 and you go out in the opener and your best team on paper loses to a middle-tier team, that's not good. And the other way around, for the SEC, they can really pound their chest if they win. But specifically to this game, I think I like Utah. I mean, they've got Tavion Thomas, is a really, really good running back. The quarterback Rising started at Texas. I believe he's a fifth-year senior. So I just think it's a very physical team. I don't think they'll be intimidated by going out there. You know, people have mentioned the weather, sure, but it's a 7 o'clock game. It's not like a noon game or anything like that. So there's, you know, Georgia, Oregon, there's great games all weekend, but I think to me this is the most intriguing game of the weekend.
Talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. So there were two teams that are actually playing each other this week that were kind of the sweethearts of college football last year. Cincinnati obviously goes to the playoff. Arkansas really shows big steps in the SEC. Do you think that those two teams can continue where they left off, or have they lost too much and are going to go back the other way?
Another good barometer game, Chase. You know, I'm interested in Arkansas. You know, they've been getting a lot of offseason buzz, and everyone loves Sam Pittman, and rightfully so. You know, the KJ Jefferson's back, which is good news, but they did lose a lot. So, to me, I know we're here in SEC country, but to me, Cincinnati's the more intriguing game. And I love this game. It's kind of a weird game, but I'm glad they're playing. Like, not saying if they lose this game, like, they're doomed and they're going to go to the Big 12 and stink, but, like, if they lost a lot of talent. And I've read a lot of Cincinnati stuff this year. We've got a really good Cincinnati writer in Justin Williams. And the theme is sort of like culture, sort of like almost at Utah, similar. Culture, program, you know, next man up. We lost these veterans, but we got in this next tier of guys who've been in the program, and they got a new quarterback. So, like, if they can sustain that level, not that level because they were a playoff team, if they can be a top 25 team again with all those losses, I think that really bodes well for their impending move to the Big 12 next year. So I would expect Arkansas to win. But, you know, Luke Fickell has built a really good program with staying power there. So another really intriguing game.
So Marcus Freeman is going to ease into him taking over as head coach is Notre Dame by taking on Ohio State. So that's a good one for sure. And that's at the Horseshoe, I believe, in Columbus. So obviously a big game. Ohio State, some people are picking to win it all, make the playoff again. But what do you think we're going to learn about Notre Dame going into this one? Ohio State, a heavy, heavy favorite.
I don't think we're going to learn a lot because I think Ohio State's going to win comfortably, and I don't think there's any shame in losing to Ohio State on the road by a significant margin. I think people will overreact. If Ohio State wins this game, you know, 41-17, people are going to, like, go crazy, like Notre Dame overrated, all this stuff. Well, there's three great teams in college football, at least that's what we think on paper this year, and then there's kind of a drop-off. Like, if you lose at Ohio State, who's clearly, you know, on paper the number two team in the country, some people might think they're the best team in the country. That doesn't mean you can't have a good season. Might not mean you're not a playoff team. So I think Ohio State's going to roll. I love their offense. Their receiving core is as good as I've seen. And, you know, put it this way, Chase. They lost two first-round picks from the receiving core, and they probably still have the best receiving core in the country. That tells you how well that quarterback room is stocked there. Now, the big key is obviously their defense, which was bad last year. They bring in Jim Knowles from Oklahoma State, very well-respected defensive coordinator. How quickly can he get those guys playing well? You know they've got more talent than they showed. They've got some really good young defensive linemen. If they can get after the quarterback, you know, Tyler Buckner, first-time starter, but, you know, sophomore at Notre Dame. If they can make life difficult for him, I think the Buckeyes really roll in this one.
Okay, so you feel pretty good about the Buckeyes. Is it safe to say you think maybe Oregon would have a better shot of competing against Georgia than Notre Dame against Ohio State?
Yes, I do. I do. Oregon, I like their talent level. I'm concerned/scared because I know it's a new coaching staff. But, like, they built – Mario Cristobal recruited, like, an SEC program, like, from, you know, inside out, sort of from the lines. They recruited well in the lines. They tried to be really physical and build their team that way. They played Utah twice. They got manhandled twice last year. So that's my concern from an Oregon standpoint, is handling Georgia's physicality on the line of scrimmage. They're good skill players, although they're Travis Dye, their number one running back, rushed for 1,000 yards last year, is now at USC, but they've got good depth there. So I like Georgia in this game, but I probably do like Oregon. If I had to pick one of these upsets, it'd be Oregon over Georgia more than Notre Dame over Ohio State.
Well, I'm just glad it's all here, and we'll have even more games to talk about next week. Mitch, thanks so much as always. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
All right. Take care, guys. See ya.
Mitch Light of The Athletic is going to join us every Tuesday at 1. Clark Lee coming up at the bottom of the hour. Vanderbilt football coach. Want to know Clark Lee? We will talk to him.
We're gonna learn more about the Phoenix.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. But coming up next, we have our trivia question of the day and Willie's three fantasy questions.
Oh yes,
to look at
a much
as well.
Anticipated segment. This is going to be good.
Yes, that is
cutting
all next.
Edge.
Chase, Willie, and D Mace. 102.5, 106.3. The game. Back here, Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you. Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, coming up at the bottom of the hour. But first, we have to get our trivia question of
the day. We do have to get the trivia question, but I got to ask a question of the rookie back there. I know that there were less channels back when I was growing up, but you do realize there was more than one TV show on back then besides Magnum P.I.,
yes.
Right?
I do.
He just likes it.
But look, this is something that Joe Dubin instilled in me, and it is fantastic.
Let me explain what's happening right now, because I know this, because I have sat in that spot before.
Yes, Nick, which I have not.
Nick is a very, very talented rookie producer.
He's
who
up
has
for
done,
Rookie of the Year.
He is leading Rookie of the Year right now. There's no doubt. He's done a fantastic job joining us, but like a lot of producers, once you kind of find your footing and you find things that you like, those are your go-tos. But it's a small group, and so you keep going back
yes,
to it.
Yes, absolutely. And have you noticed what song I play to end our show coming back from our last break? I play Wild Things, walkout music, every single show.
And that he's putting his stamp on things, and I appreciate
he's putting
that.
The stamp on, yes. Magnum P.I. is a big part of the stamp.
I love Magnum P.I., though. The Major League theme, you know.
It's a really good Game Blitz tease, too, for Friday.
Exactly. The Game Blitz is coming up Friday. That'll be fun.
I just want to make sure he knows that, you know, in the dark ages, even though I don't have a fire stick and all these things, you know, there was more than one show on besides Magnum P.I. You know, the Jeffersons. There's some other good TV themes back then,
sure.
too.
Right. We can check it out. You're not wrong. All right, ask the question.
Okay, question is, I'm thinking with the Giants coming in, let's have a little Giants-Titans trivia question. Back in the day, it is the only Titans game I ever left early. The Titans were down 21-0 to the Giants. It's one of the more memorable games, and unfortunately, the season didn't end up quite ending magical, but the Titans had a horrible start to the season. 2006, they inserted Vince Young into the lineup. He had a great run. They finished 8-8. Wasn't enough to make the playoffs, but they did have a great win against the Giants in which they trailed 21-0 at the end of the third quarter. I left. The end of the third quarter. I didn't leave at halftime. It was, you know, fourth quarter. I'm like,
this was when?
2006.
Okay. The last time they played the Giants, you were asking this during the break, was 2018. It was at New York. The Titans won 17-0.
So have they played in Nashville since the 2006? They haven't.
Well, I don't know.
I think they played more than one.
Yeah,
they
probably played since 2006.
I feel like they have. Okay, but this is the one that's memorable. Out. Here's the trivia question today. There was a Giants running back from Auburn that scored two rushing touchdowns that helped the Giants build the 21-0 lead. Can you name this running back? Giants running back from Auburn who scored two rushing touchdowns to put the Giants up 21-0 to set the stage for a great comeback. Bo escape from Vince Young with 9:35 left. Vince Young 1 yard run with 5:24 left to get them within 7. Then, of course, the crazy drive in which Matias Kiwanuka had him in the grasp. He sort of let him go. And Vince Young runs for the first down. They move the ball down the field. And then, of all people, Brandon Jones catches the tying touchdown with 44 seconds left. They get it back and kick the game-winning field goal with Rob Baronis. I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, was it a Pac-Man Jones interception that set it up?
That sounds right.
Just a miraculous comeback.
The Giants played at Nissan Stadium in 2014, defeated the Titans 36-7 in a 2-14 year for Ken Wisenhunt.
We've forgotten about a lot of those games. That was one of them. I cannot honestly tell you anything about that game.
Nah, I don't remember that game.
I don't think I was
either.
At that game. So do we have a winner? I didn't think it would take very long. 737-1025.
Still fielding some
callers.
Ooh,
we're
callers.
Still fielding calls. A running back from Auburn, from the Giants, scored two touchdowns.
So the Titans have played the Giants 3 times since 2006.
Okay. I did not mention the prize. Is the prize the same as yesterday?
I didn't mention the prize either because...
it is still the same prize as yesterday.
I got it.
Just wanted to make sure.
Thank you, Nick. two-day passes, to the Blended Festival, a pair of two-day passes at the Bicentennial Mall on Saturday, September 10th.
All right, at the Bicentennial. 737-1025. Still wrong answers so far?
No, we just got a winner.
Got the winner. Okay. The answer? The big fella. Brandon Jacobs. Remember the tremendous stable of running backs that Tommy Tuberville had at Auburn in the early 2000s. Remember, they had the undefeated season, which they were left out of the finals. They had Brandon Jacobs. They had Cadillac Williams. And I'm trying to think of the third guy. Remember, they had three absolute studs back there. And I'm forgetting the third one. They didn't declare themselves, but Golf Digest voted them the national champion.
Oh, yeah.
That whole thing.
That.
Number one in golf. But Brandon Jacobs, I watched him play against Vanderbilt a couple of years before he became a pro. And what a beast physically. You know, just there's big running backs. Like, he had sort of Derrick Henry kind of build, right? He wasn't right. not nearly as fast, but he was a guy that was very, very nimble for the size, but just the power that he used to run with.
Rashad Jennings, is that the one you were
Rashad,
thinking?
Is that right? 2003 Auburn?
That
doesn't sound right. Ronnie
Brown.
That's it. Ronnie Brown.
The Wildcat.
Yeah. The Dolphins against the Patriots.
Kind of started. Ronnie Brown was kind of the one that all started with.
So Ronnie Brown, Brandon Jacobs, and Cadillac Williams. Imagine having those three guys playing running back.
A lot of votes for Ronnie Brown.
They absolutely blasted Vanderbilt and Jay Cutler. And this was – it was actually the weekend that Gordon Gee announced that Todd Turner was out and that they were eliminating the athletic director position and eliminating – sort of, so to speak, the athletic program, the whole intramurals thing, just a total debacle from a PR standpoint. It didn't turn out to be doomsday as everybody thought, but that was quite an interesting situation to go to a football game that weekend with all of the crazy, what does this mean kind of stuff? And Auburn just throttled Vanderbilt that weekend. I feared for the health of a lot of Vanderbilt players with Brandon Jacobs running down on like kickoffs and carrying the ball. He was really good.
So very good trivia question. We will do a trivia question every day, usually at 1:30, but since we have Clark Lee, we moved it to 1:15. But in the 1 o'clock hour, that will be something we do every day on the show. You know, for years you guys did trivia, you know, and would do it for an hour. We'll do a trivia question every day for you to win a prize. You're going to have time for maybe one fantasy question before we get to Clark.
Okay, let's do one fantasy question today, and that is this. Look, the drafts are coming up. And so I'm just going to hit you with an either or. And I don't know if anybody actually knows where their draft is. Some people are probably sitting there right now knowing what pick they have in the first round. Some leagues do that. They tell you where you're going to pick. I'm just going to tell you, Chase, in theory, you have the choice of these two wide receivers. This appears to be sort of the consensus. Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp. You want to pick a wide receiver with the first round pick. Let's just say you have pick number 4. Justin Jefferson or Cooper Kupp?
That's a tough one.
I mean, this is an important decision. Like, you probably can't go wrong at the end of the day, but who are you taking?
I'm going to go with Justin Jefferson.
You would go with Justin Jefferson?
Yep.
You just think Cooper Kupp can't possibly do what he did last
honestly,
year?
Honestly, that's what I think.
Okay.
And I think he's going to regress a little bit. Maybe regress to normal, but, you know.
Still really good, but maybe not. And right now I'm looking at the average draft position. It is really tight between those two guys right in there. And do you like both of those guys more than you like Ja'Marr Chase?
No. I like Ja'Marr Chase.
So you might actually consider taking Ja'Marr Chase before those guys.
Yeah, because I like his quarterback a lot, too.
Okay.
More than the other two.
Nick, agree, disagree?
I do disagree. And actually, Kupp went first last night.
Oh, that's right. You actually had a draft.
Right.
D-Mace had the first pick. He went with Jonathan Taylor.
Correct.
Overall, right?
Yes.
So, how did it fall? Do you remember in the first round which wide receiver went first in the draft?
I was trying to find it really quick because I got an email this morning that kind of did it play-by-play for us. But I do know that Kupp went ahead of Justin Jefferson.
Okay.
And in my opinion, I see Kupp getting more targets and having more success this season. If it was me, you know, like last night, I didn't get the chance to pick him, but I think he's pretty fantastic. So I would have gone with him, honestly.
All right. Clark Lee is calling right now. So let's go ahead. And coming up next, we will talk to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. He will join us here on Chase William DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase William DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Willie Donick here with you. Derek Mason with the day off. We head over to West End. Say hello to Clark Lee, the football coach at Vanderbilt, coming off that 63-10 win over Hawaii. Coach, how you doing? I don't hear him.
Sorry, you guys got me now?
There he is, Coach.
He
yeah, is. Gotcha. How you doing?
I'm doing great now that I got the mute button off. We're all set.
Hey, it happens to the best of us. Congratulations on going to Hawaii, number one. I mean, not a bad place to start the season, but your club goes in there and gets the job done. A tremendous third quarter, especially for you. But what did you think overall about your team's performance?
Well, first of all, it's a great place to vacation. I'm not sure that I'd ever care to go back for a game. That was a challenge in and of itself. But, hey, I was proud of the way the guys played. I mean, I thought we battled some adversity early. I thought we played to an identity, and, you know, we were able to come out and handle business. You know, we had some, I think we made some breaks in the game, and that allowed us to kind of distance ourselves there in the third quarter. But that's not to, you know, to say that was luck. I think we were playing in a manner that generated opportunities, and we were able to take advantage of those opportunities. And now, you know, we get a chance to face the adversity of success, right? And recognizing that, you know, that game is finished and behind us doesn't define us. We have to take the learning from it and move forward and learn how to replicate performance. I mean, that's a challenge in and of itself, and so that's what we're facing this week.
Mike Wright had over 300 yards of total offense, whether it's with his legs or through the air, four touchdowns total. I mean, just a tremendous performance for him. Since you got there and took over as head coach to now watching him grow, what have you seen?
Well, like you would imagine from, you know, Mike presents in a manner that you forget sometimes that he's young. I mean, he's had to mature a lot, mature as a player, mature as a leader. You know, he's obviously we feel like sharpened his skills as a quarterback. Talked a lot a year ago about his need to strengthen the other 10 positions on the field, and I think he's shown the ability, proven the ability he can do that. And obviously we know he's a dynamic playmaker with the ball in his hands and can be a differentiator for us. And, you know, he was able to, you know, do that early in the game and do it often. And I was happy for him. And the thing that I know about Mike is that, you know, he's not reading his press clippings. He's refocused himself and found ways that he can improve. And there are plenty of those. And I'll be excited for him to go at it again this Saturday.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Talking to Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach. So as you've gone through now your second training camp, you start the year off 1-0. What do you see from your team from a confidence standpoint that maybe, you know, you had to build upon as you and your coaching staff put in your philosophy and your system?
Well, confidence is a funny thing. It can be fickle, and it has to be earned. You have to put the work in, you know, to really authentically be confident in performance. I believe that that we showed that, and I guess I would say that on Saturday that we played like tethered to a belief in what's possible, a belief in what we're building. And so when we did face the early adversity, you know, though I wouldn't have hoped for that adversity, I think in hindsight that you couldn't have designed the night better just because we needed the challenge, you know. And the thing that I was impressed with is it was the belief in what we've done to this point, the confidence pulled from our preparation that created a situation where, you know, our players didn't flinch. And I do feel like, you know, for this program, you know, we're still in the early phases of this build. And so, you know, for us, confidence each week has to come from our willingness to start back over from the beginning and just default back to the routines that have delivered us success to this point, delivered us progress, I should say, to this point. And from that willingness just to zero out every week and keep going back to the basics, the fundamentals, the routines, you know, I think we'll continue to build through the season and have a chance to find more winning results.
Talking to Coach Clark Lee. And Clark, before we ask you more about your team this year, you guys made the big announcement, the partnership with First Bank. And it looks like there's a lot more layers to this than, you know, they're just putting their name on the stadium.
Yeah, it's a partnership, and we're excited about that. I mean, I think it's a great Nashville brand, and certainly, you know, I've said this many times, but, you know, the mission one is for me to build a program that represents the excellence that our university represents to sustain winning here and to be an exciting ticket in Nashville. Mission two is to build inroads into the national community and really strengthen our Vanderbilt community. And I think this partnership is a manifestation of that. And I just want to credit Chancellor Dearmeyer and Candace Lee for their efforts in making this happen. And this is going to be something that doesn't just benefit us in our, you know, game day digs, but also I think will benefit our student athletes just in terms of the relationship moving forward.
People ask this all the time. They've heard about the Vandy United. There's a lot of there's a lot of intangible things. It's a process that takes time. What are a couple of tangible things you could point out to where you've seen that directly help your team to this point?
Well, specific to Vandy United, I mean that's all division, right? So you know we have this construction project that's already started. It just hasn't started above the surface yet. But you know we've had I guess to say we've had some disruption because of it. You know we were out of our stadium
right
in fall camp because they had to pull up the north end zone and do some work underground to start construction on that side of the stadium. And then you know postseason here it'll be the south end zone, and we're going to be quickly kind of working in order here to get the facilities completely redone. You know, so all of that stuff is exciting, and I think it's all packaged in the vision of what this is going to be. We have new turf down, which we desperately needed, but I think it is a reflection of a commitment to excellence here in the short term, to where we're not going to miss opportunities to make subtle improvements where we can. You know, the thing that I've been most impressed with in all this, though, is being that we're, you know, everything is temporary for us right now. So the office that I sit in as we speak, you know, the meeting rooms, the weight room, the locker room, in short order, it's all going to be gone and rebuilt. You know, our administration hasn't said no to us once with respect to, you know, making small front of house changes that impact the experience of our players. And to me, you know, it's a great, what you want to do is you want the narrative, the story that our team interacts with every day to be one of progress. And that certainly can come from being bigger, faster, stronger, which we are. It can come in being more comfortable with the manner in which we go about our daily schedules, et cetera. But I think certainly the physical signs of progress are important too. And so, you know, when you walk in our spaces, when you spend time in our facilities, you're not going to experience an environment that feels temporary. You're going to experience an environment that feels first class. And then to me, that just projects forward to excitement for what's to come. Because if we're able to do this in the spaces we're in now, imagine what this is going to look like, you know, once we have best-in-class facilities in our conference.
One of the things that caught my attention on a piece that Joe Rexroad did was he was saying that, you know, you sort of showed him the progress you guys were making behind the scenes, just in efficiency at practice and how you look and how that has maybe carried over onto the field. It had to feel good for you. So it's not just you guys get a much better result in week one or week zero this year as opposed to last year in the opener against East Tennessee State. But there was a lot that went in behind that, and you could sort of see that progress behind the scenes.
Well, you know, generally good things happen when me and Joe get around coffee and donuts. And so, that was.
I'm sure he really appreciates hearing that. That's good.
You know, sometimes because progress is incremental and again, we understand the path we're on. This isn't going to be something that happens overnight. And I think sometimes, look, I mean, when you talk about the result at Hawaii, you talk about a performance that I am really proud of. I think we represented this program the way this program is meant to be represented. And yet the challenge is replicating that. The challenge is sustaining it. And that's a real challenge. That takes time. That takes a level of maturity as a team and a program. You have to know how to win, and you have to, again, humble yourself each week. And so I hesitate to say, you know, I guess the season begins at that first result, and it's our challenge to build upon that result. And what I know is inevitably this season we're going to face adversity. That's going to happen, and, you know, there are going to be challenges embedded, and we have to we have to anticipate those, and we have to use those challenges to evolve us forward, similar to what we did a year ago. But just to specifically your statement, you know, sometimes the success, the dramatic success that you want to see is evasive, and you have to remind yourself of where you were a year ago to really see the progress that you've made over time. And the exercise that Joe and I undertook was just it was something I did in the spring. I went back a year ago and watched the same spring practice that we were currently in, and I was blown away with the progress. And that obviously, again, is bigger, faster, stronger, but it's noticeable. But it's also chemistry. It's also just quarterback and receiver connection. It's also, you know, the attitude, the total effort we play with on defense. Those things were fleeting or non-existent a year ago. We were efforting it, but just weren't getting the results. I think now we've again solidified a lot of that within our foundation, and now we're trying to build out and build upon that to create a program that, you know, again, represents the excellence of this university demands of us.
Big game coming up this weekend, as you mentioned, replicating success. You got the new turf. It's the home opener. Give us 1 minute on Elon, what we need to know.
They're a good team. They're a team that has a lot of snap experience. Very different challenge than Hawaii. Hawaii was a lot unknown, and in the end, what you understood was they were going to have to build chemistry within the four quarters of their first game, from head coach to coordinator to, you know, the players. Elon will be different. They're going to be way more versed in their systems, way more experienced together. They're going to come out and be a collective force. And it's our job not to match that. It's our job to bring our highest level to them and put them in situations that challenge them and that test them. And, you know, we're going to have a great week of prep to do that. And so I'm excited to be back at home. I'm excited to celebrate 100 years, you know, in Vanderbilt Stadium and Dudley Field. And obviously with, you know, the partnership with First Bank, it's our first time to play, you know, under that banner too, and on new turf with the new V. It's a lot to get excited about, but our guys will be really juiced up to be back at home and to have a chance to compete in front of the home crowd.
Speaking of the new V, all thumbs up from everybody that I talked to with the uniforms. I thought everybody thought that they look great. For what that's worth.
I appreciate that.
Not that I'm the fashion police or fashion consultant.
That's worth a lot. No, I appreciate that.
Well, Coach, best of luck this weekend against Elon, and we look forward to our weekly chats with you once again. We'll do it again next week.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Y'all take care.
That is Clark Lee, Vanderbilt football coach, as they will take on Elon this week, the home opener at First Bank Stadium. 4:30 p.m. coverage on 93.3 Classic Hits, our sister station, which is your home for Commodore football. And we will talk to Clark Lee every Tuesday at 1:30 here on the show. Coming up next, I'll run through my 53-man Titans roster one more time before we get out of here. Stillman and Company coming up at the top of the hour.
You want that on the record, don't you? You want to make sure that gets on the record. Well, your final 53. You feel pretty good about it.
I do. I do feel good about it. See. That's all next. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase, Willie, and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, coming up at 2 o'clock at Stillman & Company. They'll have the latest on all the Titans cuts, and also Jared and Caroline will give their thoughts on Dennis Daly and what he brings to the Tennessee Titans. Appreciate Clark Lee for joining us. We were just talking about this during the break.
I should have asked him about it.
Because you referenced Brandon Jacobs, and Clark Lee would have been playing in that game.
Brandon Jacobs was the answer to our trivia question today about the Titans-Giants game in 2006, where the Titans were down 21-0 against the G-Men at the end of three, came back and won in a very memorable game, Vince Young, etc. And I was talking about Brandon Jacobs. When he played for Auburn, they had the three incredible tailbacks, Brandon Jacobs, Cadillac Williams, and Ronnie Brown. And I was referencing the game that I saw Auburn play at Vanderbilt in 2003. Jay Cutler was the quarterback for the Commodores, a young quarterback. But it was early Bobby Johnson. They hadn't. They were short on talent, and it was the week that they announced that they were getting rid of the athletic director position. and they were putting the athletic program under the umbrella of the student body. It was very confusing, and everybody thought this meant the end of Vanderbilt athletics as we know it. But that weekend, Auburn came in. I should have asked Clark Lee because he was actually on that team. But I saw Brandon Jacobs go down on a back in the days where you had the old blocking wedge.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do that anymore because they don't want as many collisions. But Brandon Jacobs lit a guy up. I hope it wasn't Coach Lee.
He might have been like, that was me.
It was probably somebody Coach Lee knew very well. But I was very worried for his safety at that point because I'd never seen a guy as big.
Were you on the sideline?
I was not on the sideline at the time. I did some games on CSS back then. I would do the play-by-play. Pat Spruditto and I often would do the games. There was two or three per season, some of the non-conference games. But that day I was just a fan. I brought Evie, my daughter, who was 1 year old at the time. And that was not a fun day for Vanderbilt.
No. They got smoked. It was not. I may have been at that game. I don't know. I remember 2008 playing Auburn, and that was better. That was much better.
2008 was that was the game.
That was
day.
Game day.
Yeah,
yep. And I think they won that game.
Oh yeah, they did. Yeah. I was at that game. That put Vanderbilt at 4-0 or 5-0. That's pretty exciting.
That's right. So good times there. All right,
you people are blocking the library. One of the greatest signs of all time.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Okay, my Titans 53-man roster. I'll just give some of the highlights. I do have them keeping just two quarterbacks, Ryan Tannehill and Malik Willis. I went with four total running backs. That includes the fullback. So Henry, Hilliard, Haskins, Carter, the backs. Six wide receivers. Fitzpatrick is out for me. Hollister is in. Phillips
so
and
six wide receivers, and you went with three tight ends.
Three tight ends, Hooper, Chig.
That was my only difference with you. I challenge you. I believe they're going to need four tight ends.
I think you're probably going to be right.
We'll see.
I just don't know if that fourth tight end is currently here.
And that could be something they adjust in the coming
days. I think they may have played here before. But
we're wondering about that. Michael Pruitt, sure.
So that could be possible. Nine offensive linemen. Dylan Radins is not one of them.
Okay.
I think with Dennis Daly being acquired yesterday, I think he takes the spot of Dylan Radins. I do have Jamarco Jones making the roster, even though we haven't really seen much of him. It could go a lot of different directions, but I don't have Dylan Radins making my 53.
Okay. We're going to find out soon enough. And with Stillman and company, they should be able to at least give you the final roster based on today.
Yes.
Of course, we know in the coming days with all these
3 o'clock, we'll know the roster.
Yeah. And throughout the day, we've been watching guys get cut who have significant time in the NFL. We'll see if the Titans like anybody like that. But Chase, I do have to end the show on a fun.
Well, are you going to let me finish?
Oh, I thought you were done.
That was the offense.
You mean there's more than just the offense in a football game? Okay, sorry.
Defense wins championship.
Yeah, I was. I can't wait to throw this story because you can relate.
I can relate.
I've been there. But give me the defense, quick.
Defensive line, I'm going with five. The guys that have basically been here, and then I've added Walker. Outside linebacker, Landry Dupree, Weaver, Adaney, and then how do you say his last name? David?
Anini.
Yeah. I have him making it. Inside linebacker, David Long Jr., Cunningham, Chance Campbell, Jack Gibbons, Joe Jones with Monty Rice on PUP. Defensive backs, loaded room there. Fulton, Molden, Farley, McCreary, Ugo Amadi, Chris Jackson, Kevin Byard, Amani Hooker, A.J. Moore, Theo Jackson, Lonnie Johnson, and then Randy Bullock, Stonehouse, and Morgan Cox, the long snapper.
So some notable guys on defense that you are letting go for the time being are Larrell Murchison, Josh Kalu, Greg Maben.
Yep.
Who am I seeing there? Cole.
Yep.
So we'll see. We'll see if any of those guys end up back on the practice squad, how many guys might be attractive to other teams.
And look, I think there are a few that they're going to get picked up.
Okay,
by,
so
by
what's
other
your
teams.
What do you think margin for error here? As I'd like to not miss more than one on a good year when I've picked the field of 68 for the NCAA basketball tournament, which I'm hoping to be able to do again this year. So if I miss one, I can live with it. if I miss more than two, I'm really upset.
I feel good about
how many you think you're going to miss.
The 2 to 3 range.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there. I mean, Raidens could go either way. They could have a fourth tight end in Hudson. And look, it's going to be hard to tell because even
Hollister
the 50
would be a bit of an upset.
Hollister,
right?
You've got Hollister, the 53 man today, I think is going to look a lot different on Monday.
Right, and of course, down the road, we hope a lot of these guys that are on the bubble don't end up being too much of the story once the season starts. So now, are you prepared for the story out of Milwaukee last night? Okay, so the Brewers are playing the Pirates. Now the Brewers are in a dogfight, trying to catch the Cardinals, and they're trying to stay in the wild card race. And they're behind 5-3 in the eighth inning. Meanwhile, they have a system, just like a lot of stadiums do, where you can put a message into the central Twitter or whatever that the team has, and they'll put it up on the scoreboard for you.
Right.
Right? They can say, hey, shout out to Overton High School. We got a bunch of people tonight. Or, hey, you know, great job by the Milwaukee, or, you know, shout out to the Milwaukee Admirals. Good luck this season. You know, you can put whatever you want up there.
Sure.
So somebody, unnamed, writes this message up on the board. Mark, your friendship means the world to me. Let's not wreck it.
Oh, no.
So I immediately thought of you, and look, I have been in the friend zone. Now, back in my day, they didn't have this method, right? They couldn't have put, but I just had to read between the lines, right? There were some friends that I really liked that I was hoping for more, and it just, you know, the signals were such that it just, you know, wouldn't happen. If they could have written a message like this, in fact, I did one time, my homecoming date, I really put it out there in a little secret letter. And I got the secret letter back, and it was like, let's just be friends. Mm. So I was seriously friends on it. So I've been there. I know you've been there. You joke about this.
I'm the mayor.
But have you ever had the message on the
message board? No. The closest thing I had to that is one time I was with a friend and got shown on the Megatron at a Preds game, and then Jeremy Gover decides to tweet it out, or he may have just texted it to me and said, the Bud Light friend zone. And that made me laugh.
The Bud Light friend zone. Okay. But the story doesn't end there, okay? So MLB, the morning show that they have with Mark DeRosa and the crew.
Good show.
It's a funny show. They made this big to-do about, you know.
The mayor is on that show.
Yes, absolutely. So what happens is Christian Yelich sees this, and he puts a tweet out. I don't know if he did it before or after the game or whatever, but he said, let's win one for Mark. And sure enough, they rally, and it's some of the Keston Hura, who has spent a lot of time this summer playing for the Sounds, hits a home run. They tie it, and they go on and win the game.
Yeah.
So they won one for Mark, who got put in the friend zone. So his evening was not a total loss, even though I'm sure he was devastated to see that that message got up on the board. So whoever the girl is, or the significant other, that he was hoping for more, put him in the friend zone. At least the Brewers rallied for victory. And he could go home with that consolation.
You know what? Give Mark a chance.
Give him a chance.
You know, Mark is probably the guy that you tell all your girlfriends that, like, I just want to find a guy like this. Mark's right there.
He's right there. Now, the question is, this is what Lauren Chahada was speculating. Is it just mean that she's got somebody else?
Yeah.
Or she's just not satisfied enough. There's no spark with Mark.
I'm just going to leave that alone. I don't even know anymore. The Braves have claimed Jesse Chavez, so he joins the organization for the eighth time.
Is it eight, or is it more than eight?
I don't know.
It's close to double.
I don't know. Yeah. Stillman & Company coming up next. They're live at First Horizon Park. They'll have all the cuts and all the analysis for you. We're back tomorrow, 10 o'clock, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.